take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
Envision a world where traditional economic structures are complemented by a parallel freedom economy. An innovative space where individuals can unleash their entrepreneurial spirit, pursue their passions, and create limitless opportunities for themselves and others. This dynamic ecosystem is not bound by conventional norms, censorship, or restrictive regulations, but thrives on the principles of economic freedom, empowerment, and inclusivity. In today's rapidly changing landscape, the need for a parallel freedom economy has never been more pressing. While traditional economies may provide stability and structure, they often come with limitations that hinder individual creativity, innovation, and growth. This is where the parallel freedom economy steps in, offering a platform for individuals to chart their own course, experiment with new ideas, and forge pathways to success on their own terms. Imagine a world where aspiring entrepreneurs can launch businesses without excessive red tape, where talented individuals can showcase their skills without barriers, and where communities can come together to support and uplift one another in pursuit of common goals. The parallel freedom economy represents a beacon of hope and opportunity for those who dare to dream big and strive for a better tomorrow. As we navigate through the complexities of the modern world, it becomes increasingly evident that a one-size-fits-all approach to economic development is no longer sufficient. The parallel freedom economy offers a solution, a realm where individual empowerment, innovation, and collaboration reign supreme, paving the way for a more vibrant and resilient society. You're listening to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton. Before we get started today, I do want to encourage our listeners, if you have questions or comments, or perhaps you want to share your own experiences with what you're seeing on the front lines of healthcare, you can now submit those to us by sending them directly to nurses@americaoutloud.com. We will be featuring your questions and comments every week on a special Q&A episode with the nurses. We encourage all of you to engage in the battle and find your voice in this fight. But until you are able to do that, we will continue to be that voice for you. In part one of this three-part series, I am bringing you my coverage from the Replatform event in Las Vegas, Nevada. We are going to explore the boundless possibilities of the parallel freedom economy and embrace a future where economic liberation and prosperity are within reach for all who dare to seize it. Together, we can unlock the true potential of human ingenuity and creativity in building a world where freedom, opportunity, and progress intersect harmoniously. Replatform was a three-day conference and business expo aimed at connecting freedom-oriented entrepreneurs, investors, and consumers. It united inventors, banks, payment systems, hackers, farmers, and developers to create real products that work around the incompetence, stagnation, and censorship in corporate America. This groundbreaking conference was brought forth by the same team behind the Defeat the Mandates March. They united social conservatives, red pill progressives, people of faith, classical liberals, libertarians, and populists to dismantle the mandate system all across America. Now they are reimagining the same coalition to create a superior, more innovative parallel economy. In this episode, I feature interviews with two of the conference speakers, Jacob Wells, the co-founder of the crowdfunding platform GiveSendGo, as well as CEO and conservative media personality, Wayne Allen Root. I hope you'll enjoy the conversation.
All right. Well, I am here live at the Replatform event in Las Vegas. And I'm here now with Jacob Wells, co-founder of the international crowdfunding platform, GiveSendGo.com. He is a Jesus follower, husband, father to biological, adoptive, and foster children, fifth of 12 siblings and also a military veteran, musician, and infrequent marathon runner. He loves life and shares it with everyone he meets. Thank you for taking the time to stop and talk with me today, Jacob. I appreciate it.
I'm excited to be here, Kim. It's great.
Absolutely. And I think we ran into each other at another event in Arizona. And I had wanted to stop and kind of talk with you a little bit more at that time. But, things are crazy. Yeah. Things are always kind of moving fast and people are running around and it's always hard to connect with people. But glad that we've had a chance to talk today. Yeah. If you wanted to tell my listeners a little bit about how you got started with Gifts and Go.
Oh, man. It's like the long version of the short.
Which that reminds me, I should probably set my little timer on my phone so I don't go over, because we're doing short segments today. So let's do the short one today, and then we are definitely having you back.
Yeah.
Because we've hit some great points today in our pre-conversation. So.
Yeah, well, the story is amazing, and I know people love stories. I came from a family that told stories and valued what stories brought. But part of the story of Give, Set, Go was I had gotten out of the military and was doing my thing as a real estate investor, just kind of trying to figure out what the next step was for me. I really had a passion for the things of God. I actually went to Bible college to be a pastor. And so for a period of time, I was like, okay, is this where I'm supposed to go? I had siblings that had gone into different ministry forms of the pastoring or missionaries, and really trying to wrestle that through. And 2014 came around. My wife and I and our young three kids at the time moved from Virginia, where I'd been stationed, back up to Massachusetts to be closer to family. I grew up in New Hampshire, and my wife's family was from Massachusetts. And at that moment, it was sitting down with some siblings, like you mentioned, number five of 12, sitting down with some siblings at a big family gathering. It was just after Thanksgiving. And the idea of crowdfunding bubbled to the surface. I have a sister, Emily, who her brother-in-law, who was an investor in companies and stuff, had a friend who was creating a competitor to GoFundMe at the time and was failing, because GoFundMe had taken the cake of crowdfunding. It was the new model. Social media was taking off. Crowdfunding was riding the wave of people being connected on these social platforms. So as Facebook and Twitter were being adopted by so many people, people were adopting GoFundMe. It was the household name, the early one in the marketplace. But we looked at it and said, well, we have a different approach to the idea of money in the world. It's important for us to have connection and community. And funds are super important to help meet the needs that we have. But how do we also share hope with people that is a reality in these moments that they need a fundraise? Because it's not just about money. No amount of money that you give to a mom that's just lost a child in a tragic accident is relieving her of some of that pain and that grief. But we know a God that died for us so that we could have some hope in the midst of difficult moments. And so for us, that was the whole vision. It was like, people need more than just money. They need some hope as well. So let's create a platform. There's nothing out there that actually carries a message of hope in what they do. So Give, Send, Go was born out of that, like just initial conversation of, wow, is there anything that's doing anything like this? No, there's not. There's just these other platforms.
And this is, you started in 2015, is that right? Or
2014 was like where the foundation was laid, and we hired a company to start building the platform. And then by 2015 is when we rolled it out for soft launch.
Now, and so your thinking or your thought process at that time was just to bring the kind of the spiritual and the religious component to it, so that it's more than just the financial aspect of it. But was there a point where you thought that the competition is not doing the right thing with their with their, and this is pre the trucker convoy scenario, so that we didn't really maybe know how biased maybe that company is. And I don't think that your company, and I've dealt with your company, I've done fundraisers through your company, and I will say I was just so touched, because your company actually reaches out. Like, I had a real person that reached out, called me. I was floored. They called me and they prayed over, and I was just
amazing.
Floored. So that was absolutely amazing. I know that they say, you say on the website, pray for you, but to actually have somebody reach out to me, I'll tell you, it made me cry, and it'll make me cry just thinking about it now. It was what a difference that makes. But I don't think that you come off as being, one side or the other.
No.
Just that, and I'm that way too with my organization.
Right.
It's just like, we're here for everybody.
Well, what we realize is exactly that, is everybody needs hope. Everybody needs truth.
Yeah.
And you can't get to truth by catering to just one narrative, and that's on the right or the left. It doesn't matter which side. And unfortunately, what we saw in technology were companies that were siding with one side of the political ideology of the time, of the day, and it was creating mass turmoil in society and in the marketplaces. Mm-hmm. And that's where people wonder why there's like all of this tension. It's like, well, for the past decade and a half, one narrative was being shut down at every turn. And that's going to cause a lot of friction. It's going to cause, because when people can't speak, then they get agitated and they start to fight. I mean, it's a fundamental element of humans is communication, ability to communicate right. with each other. And the way to get to truth is communication from ideas on the left and ideas on the right. And that's why I value talking to people on the right. left.
Exactly.
So
it should be civil discourse. That's how we move forward as a society, when we can have a conversation. 100%. But unfortunately, many people just, they don't see it that way, and they're not willing to have that conversation. But your platform, so if I remember correctly, did your platform go through some censorship, or they tried to shut you down at some point, maybe 2 years ago?
Yeah, so we've gone through our fair share of threats against us mm-hmm. on all different levels. The first real big moment for Give, Send, Go, where the national or even international eyes were on us, was in a campaign with a young man named Kyle Rittenhouse. Many people might know the name.
Yeah.
Because it was a really like a spark moment in culture when George Floyd had died and the unrest following those moments, and Kyle kind of found his way into that just a horrendous situation and was found eventually innocent of defending himself in that moment. But at that moment, Kyle's campaign had been canceled from every platform, and he was shut off of Facebook and shut off of GoFundMe and all these other platforms that nobody would allow him. And we looked at it and said, well, in America, our foundational underpinning, which are rooted in our deeper belief systems, but it's that we are innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, not public opinion and what little piece of information at that moment I know. It's when you actually have the facts brought together by a prosecutor and defense, the whole thing. So why in the world wouldn't someone be allowed to fundraise for a legal defense? I mean, wealthy people have access to all the money in the world to fund the best private defense. Why would you stop a poor kid from, I mean, this doesn't sound even liberal at all. This sounds authoritarian and crazy. And, yeah. and so we said, no, we're going to allow this. And then it was at that moment where we started to feel the pains of what it means to take a stand for freedom, where we found a memo was leaked from Discover Card. And Discover Card at that moment was trying to stop all of its users, cardholders, from giving on our platform to any campaign, not just Kyle's, to any campaign. And then you had PayPal trying to coerce us and force us to shut things down because they didn't. And so cutting things off and pressure from our server providers to shut us down. There's all these things coming at us and articles being written that had no basis in the reality of who we were. But it was in those early moments where we're like, oh, wow, there's a lot going on here. There's a lot being unfolded. And
that really underscores the need for a parallel economy, which is why we're all kind of gathered here for the replatform event. Mm-hmm. When you think about PayPal and all of these other GoFundMe and all of the, it almost seems like they are part of a larger cabal, if you will. That's how I feel about it.
Well, they are
like a monopoly.
Well, they are actually
owned by the same.
Largely owned by the same people's venture capital and a lot of money controlling interest there. But they all are part of internal systems connected to government. I know about 3 years ago for Give, Send, Go, not even maybe 2.5 years ago, we had some members of our government come to us because we'd kind of grown on the scene and people were beginning to see us. And they said, hey, you should join this consortium of other tech platforms. We all kind of work together between the government and Facebook and Twitter and GoFundMe, like all of these platforms. And here's what you should be looking out for. And they were trying to build this ecosphere of everybody in the same boat and everyone doing the same thing. And we said thank you, but no. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of what I was talking about too, in our little pre-interview conversation. I was talking about how when I started Remnant, I didn't take any funding. I had venture capitalists that were kind of approaching me. I had several venture capitalists that approached me because they liked my idea. They loved my business plan. It's a very unique model and nobody else is doing it. But I was like, you know, thank you, respectfully, thank you, but no, thank you. I felt like it was a lot of, I mean, I'm sure it was a lot of talk. I mean, one company offered me $20 million. I said, okay, first of all, I don't need $20 million. Number one, that's number one. I'm like, look what I've been able to create from vapor. So I don't need $20 million. And I said, and the second part is that, you know, I don't want to be beholden to anyone.
Right.
Especially beholden to people that I don't think are very like-minded. So, you know, I don't want my messaging co-opted. So I'm assuming you kind of felt the same way and you just wanted to just break free because this is America and we should be able to be doing
well. There's so many cool things in your story and even in our story. In one, Gibson and Go similar story where we said, no, we're bootstrapping. Mm-hmm. We're going to let this, we're going to trust God for how this thing grows. And we're just going to be faithful in what he's given us and hopefully see that flourish. And what we have seen is it has now flourished and we're now in 85 countries and doing amazing things around the world, helping people fundraise all over the place for incredible things. But that in taking the step into allowing money to be an influence in your process, you then do become beholden to other interests. And we've said, you know what, we're not going down that road. We're going to continue to trust God for the growth and where we go. And so Give, Send, Go doesn't owe anybody a dime.
Isn't that wonderful? It's so great. I haven't even taken out a loan. I'm like, no, I'm not doing it. You know, we're just going to keep going and going. And it's the blessings come. I really believe that. I said, you know, I'm not financially driven per se. I'm very mission driven. And I feel like, you know, the blessings will follow. You answer the call. When God calls and you answer, you're going to be blessed abundantly. That's how I feel. So that's never been an issue for me. I've never, you know, worried about that. I always said, hey, listen, as long as I have a roof over my head, I'm so fulfilled. I haven't had a paycheck in 2 years, but I've never been more fulfilled in my life than walking in my calling. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. But definitely, we need to have these cancel culture. Let's talk about cancel culture. We touched on that a little bit. But you believe that it's crucial for these like-minded companies and businesses to collaborate to a certain extent.
Exactly. To definitely to a certain extent. I think redundancy is super important. So when I see or hear of other companies, even within this ecosphere of companies saying, hey, we want to align ourselves more with freedom and freedom of speech, I say the more the better, because redundancy is great. Who knows? People are fickle, and sometimes people do go a certain direction and other directions, whatever. You need to have more than one. You can't just invest everything in one basket, which is how authoritarian, totalitarian things come to be, is everything gets invested in one place. So diversify, encourage people to take a step of faith and do things. And that helps prevent cancel culture. Many people doing different things. Is that competitive edge prevents that? What we've seen is our main competitor, we've said their name a couple of times. I don't like to say it often, but GoFundMe. They've actually changed their policies now because of Give, Send, Go in the marketplace, where they wouldn't take certain campaigns before. Now they are because they realize that if they don't, they're coming to us and then we'll get the market share of it. We'll get the media that were canceled. And before they found out about Give, Send, Go, they actually killed themselves.
Oh my gosh.
Horrible, horrible situations. Yeah. I'll actually be speaking a little bit later tomorrow, probably share the story. But it's insane what, when you rob people of an opportunity to have a voice, to have voices speak into them, support them, which is what cancel culture does, literally kills people. And we've seen the output. And so for my sister and I, we've said, no way, we're going to continue to stand for freedom and for a freedom for not just the ideas we believe in, even for the ideas we don't believe in, and allow that conversation and that transparency to actually bring value to the marketplace, and that's what it does.
Yeah. And I love collaboration to a certain degree. You want to collaborate and support one another and your endeavors, even if there's a little bit of competition there.
Right.
We offer advocacy services. We just recently advocated medical kidnappings. That's a whole other story. That's a huge problem in our society. And we are advocating. We've been very successful in that arena, but you know, we're not the only organization out there. And like I tell people, just have a plan, whether it's my organization or another. I mean, we would love to take care of everybody, but let's be realistic, we can't. But we do want to make sure that everybody has access to safe, affordable, and competent care.
Right.
So in that vein, we're going to collaborate and support others who are in this arena as well. And we wish them well. Right. And like you said, competition is healthy for the market.
Be completely healthy for the market. It keeps things in a correct vein. People have options. They can figure things out. And it does allow us to pass on the lessons that we've learned, because with the overarching vision, that's really what brings unity. This is where the whole DEI model breaks down, is that diversity is not effective if it doesn't have a unifying vision that covers it. Diversity is only effective and great when you have a pointed direction and a unifying vision. And we've now marched to this tune as a society for diversity's sake. And what that just breeds is divisiveness.
Yep.
It's like saying, oh, I'm going to marry somebody. We have nothing alike. It's like, well, that's not going to be good, because you have no unifying. You have to have something that unifies you. And for a long time in America, it was these fundamental principles of individual freedom and liberty. And those things have been eroded because of crunch in the marketplace. And you say replatform and collaboration. I really say that the it's not even a parallel economy that we're building. It's a replacement economy. I really believe that it's something that will grow bigger than and be better than the dying model of censorship, because that's what it does. It's just death and destruction.
Yeah.
And when you allow people the freedom in your platform and offer your services to the most people, guess what? You're going to win.
Exactly. And so, I say this about the healthcare model too. I mean, I'm kind of famous for saying, I hope it burns to the ground. And, you know, we as nurses have to stop fanning the flames and putting them out, because we've been doing that for decades. But we need to, you know, let it burn, because it's unsustainable. It's unfixable, in my opinion. But at the same time, there are always going to be people that we're not going to be able to serve. Because we're a cash pay only model. We can't take insurance, because if we do, then we are beholden to all of those edicts. We can't do that. So then that cuts out our most vulnerable populations, which is very, as a nurse, very difficult for me, because you're cutting out your elderly and you're cutting out your low income families. Mm. And these are the people that need our services the most. And that's why we try to do some fundraising and things like that. But I'll tell you, and I'm sure because you're in the space, you understand that it's difficult.
Right. Oh,
and
sure.
Right now the economy is not doing so well, so nobody's really giving. So it's a tough place to be in, and we want to help everybody.
Right.
And I would do all of this for free if we could. If we could sustain it, we would do it 100% of it for free. But unfortunately, that isn't the world we live in.
Mm-hmm.
But the more relevant we become, the more it's going to hold their feet to the fire, and they're going to have to raise their standards, because right now their standards are so low that there's no other option though. You know, so they're going to have to raise the bar in order to even be somewhat relevant. So hopefully that'll trickle down to help people.
You're seeing it in the marketplace all over. You're seeing companies like Disney lose billions of dollars because of crazy bad policies. You see, just read an article, Vice going bankrupt, a media organization that's just, you know, following crazy policies. They're going to go into the dumpster of history because they chose bad policies for doing business. And when you have companies that are founded properly, you're going to see them flourish over time.
Yeah. Now, as you're definitely an advocate, like you said, not for a parallel economy, but more like a replacement economy, and I couldn't agree with you more, but what do you think are some of the key principles or strategies that you believe are going to be essential for fostering this type of thriving environment? And do you see any, you know, so individuals can pursue these economic aspirations with minimal barriers and restrictions, because, you know, there's always so much bureaucratic red tape.
Yeah, there are. And, you know, we live in such an incredible moment in history where somebody like myself, who didn't have a degree, been in the military, came from a blue collar family with lots of kids, just had an idea And we said, let's make this a reality. And that's a possibility for everybody because of what technology's done, what the advancement in society's done. So I think there's more opportunity now than ever. What's going to make it succeed, I think, like you were talking about a moment ago, is that collaborative effort in helping each other in the process. And it's kind of like the, excuse me, I had to cough for a second.
No, yeah.
I say the pioneering spirit, the reason why Gibson goes where it's at today, one, because we're willing to pioneer in doing something, but we also had people that were willing to pioneer with us. They were willing to break away from the mainstream platforms that they could have used and said, hey, there's this new company that might not be as refined yet as the rest, but we're going to invest in them. We're going to use them. We're going to share them. We're going to utilize their services. And through that, Gibson goes now from our standpoint, technologically, functionally better than pretty much any crowdfunding platform that I know out there. We've got an amazing systems in place for everything, for catching fraud, for catching, detecting, verifying campaigns, all of that stuff. But it was because there was a willingness on people to collaborate together, say, hey, you know what? Let me take a chance on what you have. Let me invest into it. So that little bit extra to see something happen. And events like this that are bringing people together, this replatform event, and another amazing opportunity for people to connect, for us to get to know each other, even here personally, along with so many other people, and really sow into. The reason why we have a pray button on Give, Send, Go is because we recognize there's so much value in the things that we send. And this biblical verse in the Old Testament says, life and death is in the power of your tongue. You can either sow life or you can sow death. And people are desperate to hear life today. Culture just spews death over them all the time. You're worthless. You'll never get ahead. There's no opportunity.
It's the victim.
And the message that we have to be able to give to people is life-giving. It is sharing hope and giving life. And that pray button is so powerful because it allows people to actually hear from the people that may not even have money to give, but just a message of hope and encouragement. And we hear from campaign owners all the time say, I can't believe, listen, we met our goal, we raised the money, but I don't even care about that. I go home and I open my mailbox and I see people from around the world that have sent a message inspiring, encouraging me to continue on in what I'm doing and to stand tall and walk through this. And those messages, that's the encouragement. And so we all have that. That's what's going to make this succeed, is that we don't get bitter.
Yes.
We don't get, you know, disgruntled by some of the things that we can see, because there are the realities of the world around us, but that we continue to speak life and hope to people. And that actually creates life. It actually does make good things happen.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the messages of hope and inspiration and the encouragement is really what carries me through. Because I get so many emails that, you know, I wish I could give, but let me just pray for you. Right? And that's huge. That's everything to me. So you're so right there. But so, you know, I think you touched on it a little bit, which is my last question to you, is how do you, you know, what do you hope to gain from your time here at Replatform? And I think you pretty much covered that, just like that networking aspect of it and
coming
together.
I've already gained. I mean, I've got to meet you. I've got to meet some amazing people just being here. And as being from a massive family, Heather and I, our mission with Gifts and Go has always been, it's just to grow the size of the family.
Yes.
It's the Gifts and Go family.
Yes.
And we invite people into it from all different walks of shades of life. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, we're here. We're going to walk with you in your journey. And that's what's happening at this event. And that's what we're gaining.
Yeah. Yeah. So far, we're rolling into Replatform. We've been at the COVID litigation conference, and that's been a really successful event. And we've had some great conversations that have come from that. And then we're rolling right into this very necessary Replatform event for a parallel economy. Jacob Wells, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you, Kim. Pleasure to be here.
Absolutely.
America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio network. You can also listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best in-class apps available on Apple, Android, or Alexa, 24/7, great talk radio. All of our shows go to podcast the following day. You can hear them on apps such as Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, and many more. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts for me. Don't forget to check out our online store at americaoutloud.shop, where you can find all of the products that we represent on our network at a discounted rate, including a sea of Redox, which I can personally speak to seeing fantastic results with, including better sleep, increased energy, improved mood, and a decrease in my joint pain. Use promo code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your purchase. I'll catch you on the other side of this break. Stay with us.
It's time and this is what.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
When God, through His grace and mercy, gave us free will, the will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutloud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
It's time and this is war.
Welcome back to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton. Wherever you're listening from today and whatever you're doing, I thank you for giving me the gift of your time. Be sure to make AmericaOutloud.news your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. We all must do our part and share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, and videos so we can help secure America's future. If you're just joining us, I've been sharing my coverage from the Replatform event in Las Vegas, Nevada. Let's jump right back in with my interview with Wayne Allen Root. All right, I am back here and I am live still from the Replatform event in Las Vegas, and I am here with Wayne Allen Root. Now, Wayne Allen Root is a Las Vegas gaming CEO. He was a 2008 Libertarian vice presidential nominee, and he is the host of the nationally syndicated Wayne Allen Root, Raw and Unscripted. He is also the best-selling author of 15 books, including the Great Patriot Protest and Boycott book, Trump Rules, The Power of Relentless, The Ultimate Obama Survival Guide, and The Murder of the Middle Class. You are described as the Las Vegas version of Trump.
The liberal media described me as that, believe it or not. I am kind of Trump-like. Listen, I'm good.
You are.
Trump. I'm kind of Trump-like.
Well, tell him I said I.
You gave a good bio, but you left out the most important part, which is my whole life now is built around my Real America's Voice TV show.
Yes.
And so it's a weekend TV show every Saturday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. It is America's Top 10 Countdown. I've always argued that the media picks the most important stories, and I don't agree with any of those stories. stories being important, right. You know, or the side they're on anyway, for sure.
Yeah.
But even the importance of them very often is in question. Yeah. It's from the standpoint of a very biased liberal.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a conservative patriot, right? Mm-hmm. Conservative is not even the right word. I'm a pro-American patriot, America yeah. first patriot. And so now I get to pick the top 10 stories each week yep. in all of America. And being that I'm doing national radio and national TV every day, Monday through Friday, and I've already picked 20 stories each day for those shows, mm-hmm. I now pick on Fridays when I film my Saturday show, I have 100 great stories to choose from to narrow it down to the top 10. That's my show on Real America's Voice, Top 10 Countdown. So that show's wildly successful. It's my biggest audience. And that's really where I come from as Wayne Root, host of America's Top 10 Countdown on Real America's Voice TV.
Love it. Well, I got a little bit of your speech this morning, which was incredibly good. You're talking about that you were a law student at Columbia University.
Yeah, I was pre-law.
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 Pre-law yeah. and political science.
Yes.
And you were doing that in 1983. And supposedly you were you graduated, supposedly.
Yes, on the same day.
On the same day as Barack Obama.
Same day, yes.
And despite the fact that you were both pre-law, you were both political science majors, you had never run into a Barack Hussein Obama.
Never.
And no other students have ever run into him.
No Barry Obama, no nothing, nothing.
And no professors. That's interesting.
No professor I ever talked to. Keep in mind that, you know, I've already been out of college 40 years.
Yeah.
So some of them have died. But the professors I actually tracked down that are alive all say he's never been in our class.
That's interesting.
It's not interesting. It's stunning.
Yeah, right, right. And then so many people are just completely asleep at the wheel. Like they right. don't put two and two
Which
together.
Which is why I think, you know, he's the ghost of Columbia. He himself yeah. called himself once the ghost of Columbia.
Interesting.
Because someone said that Fox News called all 705 members of our class to ask if anyone knew him. And not one person
not
ever
one
knew him.
Person.
And he said, well, I guess I'm the ghost of Columbia. And he said, I didn't like people. I was shy and I was hiding in the library. Now, who believes that Obama was shy?
It's ridiculous. One of the first things I noticed about him was how like dynamic yes. he was when he was the keynote speaker back in, I think it was 2004
yes.
at the Democratic National Convention.
Correct.
I can remember seeing him there. And I looked at my husband at the time and I said, look out for him. I said, I'm telling you, that right. man is going to be president one day. And my husband said, absolutely not. That's not going to happen. I said, I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm. You were right.
He's going to be president. I said, it's not going to be a good thing. Mm-hmm. But he's
And if you think like a patriot, then you'd yeah. say, look out for that man. He's going to be trouble.
Yes. Yes. I was like, I'm letting you know, look at how dynamic he is.
Yes.
People are going to be attracted to him now.
Well, that's one reason I'm a fan of Vivek Ramaswamy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't like him. They're not sure that he's really conservative. He had made a conversion recently, but he's fantastic. And I would argue he's the Republican version of or the conservative mm-hmm. version of Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And some of them go to me, yeah, but that's why we don't like him. And I go, no, you're getting confused. You don't like Obama's policies, his agenda, but you certainly think he's a charismatic personality. Right. We need that.
Absolutely.
I think Vivek is the next in line. I think he should be Trump's VP. I yeah. personally like that choice.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Yeah. But we need a Barack Obama, the GOP. I would be that, except I can't take the pay cut.
Oh, right. No kidding.
I'm not leaving TV and radio to go run for
exactly.
office, right? That's not going to happen. So, you know, but I have life. I have personality. We yeah. don't have many candidates that
No,
have that.
We don't. And you know, it's a, we fit the stereotype really well of
right.
like the old white,
stodgy.
Yeah. Right. We fit that stereotype.
Some of the people I watch who are U.S. senators, Republican and Democrat, by mm-hmm. the way. It's like they died and they should be like up in heaven now or
right.
hell,
right.
wherever they might
right.
be, probably hell.
Probably
but,
hell.
But the point is they don't even look alive anymore.
Yeah.
You know, look at they walk like Biden. Mm-hmm. You know, the Biden walk is a shuffle. It's yeah. not even a walk, it's a shuffle, and his arms don't move. That's what these guys are like. They die, they want to die in their Senate seat. Mitch McConnell.
Oh, I know.
Here, if you were doing an interview with Mitch right now, here would be Mitch's response to you.
Yeah, exactly.
The blank, right?
the blank the stare.
The blank That's it.
Stare.
It's nothing to say.
Oh, God bless.
It's unbelievable.
It really is. And it's so interesting to me. I mean, you brought up so many good points. You talked about, we don't even have time to cover them all. I'll have to definitely get you back on. You talked about the illegal aliens that are coming in, that there's likely 30 million. Was it
by
million?
By the time of his first term, 30
yes,
million.
By the time of the inauguration.
And I just had a guy come up to my booth. I was signing books out there. Mm-hmm. He just came up and said that he was Border Patrol. I think he said he still is Border Patrol. And he said, what are your numbers? And I said, well, what are your numbers?
Mm-hmm.
I said, I like to say that if 10 million have come in, it's really 20
yeah.
because for every one they caught, there's one got away. And he said, you're pretty close to being right. He said, somewhere between, for every 10 we catch, we mm-hmm. figure 6 to 10 are gotaways.
Yeah.
So there really are somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 for every 10 you think are in. There's really 20. It's 2-1 because half of them got away. And nobody's talking about that number.
Yeah.
So how can you run a country like this? It's not possible that you would want 30 million people in your country who are foreigners. You don't know anything about them. Some are terrorists. Mm-hmm. Some are MS-13. Yeah. Some are Hamas. Some are Hezbollah. And some are Chinese military age males. Are you kidding me?
Exactly.
You want them running around our country?
And it's so interesting that we've gotten people to really be open to this and welcoming to this, even though it's to our detriment and it is crushing the middle class.
I don't know anyone is welcome to it except for the politicians on the Democrat side. And I argue all day long. Look, I'm a businessman. Like I said, I am a Trump, right?
Mm-hmm.
All my life, I've made money by telling people. This is what I would say to them. I would say, Kimberly, you want to do business with me? If you bring me a $100 deal, I'll give you $10. You give me $1 million deal, I'll give you $100,000.
Yeah.
And that's how I do all my deals, right? Everyone wants a piece of the action, right?
Right.
You don't want $10. You want a piece of the action.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So I think every Democrat is in bed with the Mexican drug cartel.
Yeah,
other reason you'd allow all these people in except you're getting $10 for everyone that comes across the border. Yeah. So you're making 10 million, 20 million, 30 million.
Well, you know, something I really found interesting, you know, I'm an ICU nurse. I worked through the pandemic. I saw what was happening at the bedside and what was happening.
Did you take the vaccine and keep your job?
I absolutely did not take the vaccine.
And you kept your job, though?
Well, I ended up being exempted. So I left the bedside because I was watching my patients be systematically murdered for profit.
Right.
That's what
I agree.
100%.
How about remdesivir?
Exactly right. The remdesivir is murdering these patients. It's not COVID.
And you know, they're still giving it to
giving it to this day. And it's proof for babies 6 months and older.
I know a woman whose mother was just in the hospital and they gave her remdesivir. And she begged her not to take it. And she made the mistake of saying, listen, Wayne Allroot's a really smart guy. Wayne says, don't take it, Mom. It'll kill you. And she said, Wayne Allroot's a talk show. What does he know? My doctor says to take it.
Exactly. It's that implicit trust in the white coat.
Right.
And that's what happened. I to the point where I had to leave the bedside because I could not stand to watch one more of my patients needlessly die. You know, they were doing the early intubation. They were pushing intubation. That
so what's your theory, right? In other words, I think no doctor wakes up and says, I want to kill all my patients.
No, no.
There are two things I think, and let's see if you agree with me. Okay. Number one, people think doctors are brilliant, and they are brilliant test takers, which is how they got there.
Yeah.
But actually, they're sheep who just listen to whatever the AMA, the FDA, and who's the third one, the CDC says to them.
Yeah.
And that's it. They just follow it. And B, everybody wanted to get rich. That's it. I don't think anyone wanted to murder anybody.
Correct.
You know, it's someone somewhere, maybe George Soros wants to.
Right.
But I'm just saying those doctors didn't want to murder anyone, but they turned a blind eye if they could get rich and get all the bonuses.
My biggest question, I ask this all the time, is, you know, were they just complicit in the lie or did they not know any better when they should? And then I'll ask you, which one of those scenarios is more frightening to you? Because
they're equally frightening.
They're very
equally
frightening.
Which one do you think with the doctors you met? So, I'm interviewing you now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been in healthcare for 27, nearly 30 years now.
Okay.
And people think that doctors do their own independent research. I can promise you they do not. They do not. And the system by design, by the way, listen, they're shuffling in the patients, herding them in like cattle, 5 to 7 minutes. You don't get to the root cause of anything, right? So it's a
sick care system. And vitamins are bad.
Vitamins are bad. It's a total sick care system that we're in. But they're so deeply indoctrinated. And what people don't understand, the corporatization of medicine was the death of medicine.
Right.
And these doctors, they are, they're paycheck employees.
Right.
They're paycheck
employees. You got it. My next door neighbor is a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I like him. He's one of the nicest men you'll ever meet. And he treated me.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him one day, by the way, you listen to my radio show all the time. You said you love it, right? He said, yeah, I love it. I listen every day on the way home. I said, so did you get vaccinated?
Mm-hmm.
He said, yes. I said, but you listen to my radio show.
Yeah.
Why would you get vaccinated? And he said, because I had no choice. I have a mortgage to pay. He said, I used to own the practice, but we sold out to a big corporation and they own 300 around the country and they made us get vaccinated. And I said, are you taking the booster? Yes, can we take the booster? And I said, this is all for a mortgage. He said, well, you think I have a kid about to go to college? What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
So they're paycheck employees. That's it.
That's exactly right. And so
just a higher paycheck than the average person. That's
exactly. And if you think back to during the height of the pandemic, the nurses, they were paying them $10,000 a week. Travel. That's a lot of money for a nurse.
Yes.
That is a lot of money for nurses.
But it's a lot of money for everybody.
Yeah. I call it hush money. It's not that I blame them for going and taking that money, but to me, there's no amount of money that is
to make you kill people.
Exactly. Or to ignore.
But did those nurses who got paid the $10,000 a week, did they take the vaccine or they wouldn't have been allowed to do it?
It's interesting. Some of them did. Some of them did not because interestingly enough, even though they had the mandates that if you wanted to remain employed by the hospital, you had to be vaccinated, the agencies didn't require the vaccine. Okay. So they would fire the nurse that wouldn't get vaccinated and then bring in a traveler who wasn't vaccinated because they're required.
And they wouldn't ask the question.
They don't ask.
Right. It's, don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, pretty much. So I know I started Nurse Freedom Network, which, you know, it was, we started out 501c3 nonprofit, and we are out there, we're protesting at these hospitals that were firing their nurses. And I quickly pivoted from that because I said, my vision's a little bit bigger, right? I started Remnant Nursing. We're now rebranding to Remnant Healthcare. Like you were talking about earlier, we're a revenue sharing model.
Yes.
Because we're trying to create opportunities for nurses and healthcare workers, doctors, everybody to come out of the system. We're a 508c1a.
Well, you're not sharing your revenue with Mexican drug cartel.
No, I know. But oh, to your point, that, thank you for saying that, because that was the point I was trying to get to, the Mexican drug cartel. What is one of the biggest drugs that we see flooding over the border?
Fentanyl.
Right. What do you think is the protocol, number one protocol treatment in the hospitals right now for COVID and everything else in, under the sun in the hospitals right now?
Is the answer fentanyl?
The answer is fentanyl.
What would that do to you if you had COVID? Why would that be helpful to you?
You know, so fentanyl, they're going to give you that.
It's just a painkiller.
It's pain, and they're going to do it for set. They're giving you all of these high pain medications to set, that you've got to sedate people, and you have to use a paralytic if you're going to have them on a ventilator.
Yes.
It would be cruel not to.
Right.
But the problem with that is they're putting them on these doses that are ridiculous. But the fentanyl, there are other things that you could use. To me, I don't think it's a coincidence that it's the number one drug pouring over our borders. And then
No, you just educated me. I didn't even know they used that for that.
Yes, it's like the number one protocol.
But you know, here's the thing. I'm not a doctor and I'm not giving prescriptions. But if you take ivermectin, COVID goes right away.
Thank you. Ivermectin,
they will be
used in humans, by the way.
Yes.
3 decades.
Yes.
3 decades.
With no side effects.
No side effects. Higher safety profile than an aspirin or a Tylenol. And we have the was it the FDA, CDC, who knows which one of the captured three-letter agencies, think you're not a horse, y'all. Don't take this medication.
Meanwhile, it's now been 2 years. Mm-hmm. First of all, I got COVID. And the only reason I got it, by the way, I don't wear masks. Mm-hmm. Never got vaccinated. Never locked down. Conducted business 24 hours a day, the same way I always did, and never got COVID for 2 years, and then finally did get COVID. What's the big deal? COVID's the flu. Everyone gets sick once in a while. So I took ivermectin and mega dose of vitamin C, and it was gone in a day.
I was gone in 2 days.
It was basically gone in a day, and it totally gone in 2 days.
I was an ICU nurse, right? I worked through the pandemic. I'm directly caring for COVID patients. I was on immunosuppressants at the time, right? I have many autoimmune conditions. So I was on immunosuppressants, so I would be more likely to contract it, right?
Of course.
Took me nearly 3 years to even get COVID.
Wow.
Despite the fact, again, I didn't mask out in the community because we know that they don't work. They don't stop aerosolized viruses.
Right.
It's ridiculous. I knew really
the germ's smaller than the hole.
Exactly. It's not that hard.
People?
It's
not that hard. How could you be that dumb?
It's not that hard. If you actually just like literally Google the size of the virus and the size of the mat, you're going to understand that it's not going to work.
But it wasn't about that. It was about slavery.
About
they want people to be, you know, listen to dutifully like the sheep to everything they say. And if they follow that, they know they'll follow everything else. That's all it was ever about.
Look at, you know, I was seeing vaccine injuries at the bedside very early on in the rollout. Like I'm talking December, January 2021. It was awful. And so I've been speaking out very loudly about that for the last nearly 3 years. I'm screaming it from the rooftops. I'm like, it doesn't prevent transmission. Why are we pushing this? Can we believe that we're still here mandating this for people that they're on like, I don't know, 8 or 9 boosters and people are literally dropping dead
of
sudden adult death syndrome.
Did you hear my speech in there, by the way?
I
just happened to mention just literally this week, some 32-year-old TV host in Scotland died jogging, dropped dead of a heart attack. Now, when did we ever see 32-year-olds die jogging? Never.
Not
until the vaccine. Yeah. Now you see it all the time.
Yeah. And think about the VAERS. If you look at the many reports of VAERS, VAERS is drastically underreported. VAERS is only about 1%.
I know that.
Right? So people are like, oh, well, that's not, anybody can make a VAERS report.
Yeah, that's not credible.
Let me tell you how difficult as a nurse.
I know
how difficult it is to go in there. That system times you're
only a medical professional could do it. Only a nurse or a doctor.
Yeah,
and no doctor
do it.
And no doctor has time to do it. So when his patient dies, they don't do it. So it's only 1%. I agree.
And another thing that you don't understand is many nurses don't even understand that VAERS exist. They're not educated on it.
Right.
So that's another thing we do is we educate it. That nurses, they don't even understand that they are mandatory reporters.
Right.
So if you're getting safety signals or, you know, the first thing you should be asking these patients is, were you vaccinated? What kind did you get? When did you get it? How many boosters have you had? If you have all of these new onset. I started doing that when I was working on a telephone triage line. After I left the ICU, that's what I was doing. And I would get so many phone calls from usually men between the ages of 18 and 35 with all these cardiac She was crushing chest pain, all of these things, stroke.
And all vaccinated, right?
All vaccinated. Yeah. So I started, it was not part of our assessment to ask about the vaccination.
So did you get in trouble for asking?
Well, I ended up quitting before they could fire me, but but I knew it was coming because all of our calls were recorded.
You know, I'm pretty well known for asking the same question again and again and again on my TV show.
Me too.
Why can't we just ask every person who dies, yes, ask their family, were they vaccinated?
Yes,
it's exactly a very simple question.
And
you'll see a pattern.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to ask a question because they know you'll see a pattern.
Yes. This is the approach I like to take with things. I don't like to come out and attack people for having different beliefs. And we've all been so deeply indoctrinated and propagandized for decades.
You know what I say? This isn't politics.
No, it's not.
Why do you think it's political to say the vaccine doesn't work? The vaccine doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
That's not politics.
It doesn't work. If it worked, why do we need 9 boosters?
If it works, why do you need a mask?
I mean, just make it make sense, right? But here's the thing that I like to ask these thought-provoking questions, right? If it were the virus itself killing all of these patients,
yes,
then why is the only place anyone is dying? It's in a hospital. Nobody's dying at home.
Right.
Nobody, think about a homeless population. They didn't receive any treatment at all. They're probably not vaccinated.
The continent of Africa? Again, this is not a racist comment.
No.
This is a poverty comment.
Yes.
Got to be the poorest place in the whole world. Everyone's miserably poor.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a disease going around, they'd all die.
Yes.
I've never heard anything about anyone dying in Africa. You know why? Because they all take over-the-counter ivermectin,
yeah,
hydroxychloroquine for malaria.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody dies because they all take it like I pop vitamin C, they pop HCL, hydroxychloroquine. So it's just, it's so amazing. And then, of course, there's the other story that nobody wants to get out, that in the incredibly poor country of India, they did have a terrible COVID outbreak because I guess they don't have malaria there, so they don't take ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. So they had a terrible, supposedly the worst outbreak of COVID in the world, in the poorest slum in the world.
Yeah.
And the government made the decision to hand out ivermectin, vitamin C, vitamin D, and zinc for free.
Did phenomenal.
And it went away in a week.
Yeah.
In a week, it was gone.
No, like you look at the remdesivir, like if you realize that the remdesivir was used in 2008 in the Ebola trials, if we look back to that, we know that 54% of those study participants died.
I didn't even know that.
Yes, 54% of those study participants died. So I feel like if we had led with that, as it's an EUA, now here's the thing. In order for an EUA to exist, there can be no other treatment.
Right.
So that is why. Ivermectin, all of these other things.
You had to get it out of the way to get approval for the vaccine.
For the vaccine,
right.
Exactly.
By the way, do you know what the name is nurses often give to remdesivir?
Yes, of course I do. Remdesivir.
If elections were honest, Trump would win by a massive landslide.
Correct.
But it's all rigged, and I don't know if he's going to win by a massive landslide.
Yeah.
He might win close because he has so many votes now he can overcome the rig, or they might beat him,
and it won't matter.
I don't know.
I have a question. A lot of people don't want to ask this. So you told me you're friends with Trump. You don't have to answer this.
About the vaccine?
Yes. Now, okay, here's the thing. I was a big Trump supporter. I'm still a Trump supporter.
I know he's wrong on the vaccine. We all know that.
Okay, thank you.
We all know that.
Is he going to do a mea culpa? That's what I want to know.
No, like, not that I see.
Okay.
No, and I'll tell you why I think.
Am I still going to vote for him? Yeah.
Yes, of course. I'm going to be very open about this. I always say, look, if I agree with you at 70%, we're friends, not enemies.
Right.
I agree with Trump on 99.9%.
Sure.
One thing we're diametrically opposed on the vaccine.
Yeah.
And I think it's because Trump is a money guy, right?
Right.
And we, you know, nothing, I'm not saying anything bad here.
No.
Right? It's capitalism.
Fine.
We all love money in America. There's nothing wrong with loving money.
Yeah.
Trump has been given millions of donations by Pfizer.
Mm-hmm.
And millions of donations by Woody Johnson of Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah.
And he stands on stage with them all the time, Woody Johnson. He's the owner of the New York Jets, and he's the owner of Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah.
So for Trump to say the vaccine is deadly would be putting down the people that gave him millions of dollars.
Right.
And I don't think he wants to offend them, and that's why he doesn't do it.
Yeah.
That's my
point. I get that.
But people are dying.
I'm like, oh my God, but people are dying. Like, so does he know, or does he still actually
believe? I think that he wants to believe in his heart that no one's dying, and that he did a good job with Operation Warp Speed. And here's the thing.
Have him call me.
Listen, he's on my show 14 times.
Yeah.
And I tell him every time how terrible the vaccine is.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, we disagree. And I say, but, and I want to make sure all my fans know this.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, how can you support Donald Trump if he loves vaccine and you don't? And my answer is, he never mandated it for anyone.
That's true. Yeah.
And he says, if you're a woman, if you're black, if you're white, if you're old, if you're young, if you're in the military, I would have never mandated it. So you never had to take it.
Exactly.
That's all I could ask for. That's okay. I'm accepting
it. And I'm with you there. And like, I wish he would do me a couple on that. I wish he would speak out a little bit more about it. But
I said, all you need to say is one sentence.
Yeah.
I had nothing to do with it. Yeah. Or maybe two cents. It was all Fauci. He lied to me.
Exactly. He's not a doctor. He's following the science. Right. I get it. I 100% get it.
He doesn't want to say he doesn't like to measure.
Yeah. Well, and I get that about him too. I can remember being at a Trump rally as a big supporter, and I'm literally in the front row. And it was the last one I went to, because he was like, get your booster. And I was like, what? I was like, no.
That was a long time ago. He never says that.
No, he doesn't say that anymore. Ever. We'll give him that. And I'm thankful. So at least he's
Was he booed when he said it?
Yeah. Well, I was the loudest one.
There you go.
I was screaming. I was like, yes,
hey,
yes.
I would have booed him.
Yeah, exactly. But so I'm glad to see that he's at least backed down from that position. And but like you said, 99% of everything else that he's doing is amazing. Look where we're at right now. We are.
No one ever would have had to take the vaccine. So even if he loves it, who cares? As long as he can't force it on me, I'm happy.
Exactly right.
I just saw the other day that literally days ago, Harvard, now today in 2024, Kimberly, Harvard said every student must take the latest booster.
That's ridiculous.
They're killing their own students.
They are. We had a nursing student that died one day after she got the booster. She was a nursing student. They made her get the booster. The first one. The first shot to finish our clinicals, because they will not. The school says we don't require.
She finished them, all right.
But yeah, she finished them. Her. Exactly. And it was the
But you must admit, like, there might have been 100 people in her class and she's the only one who died. That's the reason no one's certain yet. Mm-hmm. It's all happening slowly in slow motion.
Right.
So over the next 5 years, half her class might be dead, but they don't all drop dead on the same day.
Exactly.
So nobody notices what's going on. It's happening in slow motion. Mm-hmm.
And we've got to be looking at this data. And if you look at all of the data and everything, and you're looking at all-cause mortality is up.
Dramatically, everywhere in the world, they give the booster. Everywhere.
Yeah.
Especially the booster more than the regular vaccine.
Yeah.
Anyone took the booster, I think, is walking dead. I really do.
So, I mean, that was the kill shot.
And by the way, I will brag. I'm the only mainstream, because I'm not just a podcaster. Right. I don't mean that in a bad way. But I have TV shows and radio shows on major networks.
And
first day, I said, do not take the vaccine. Yeah, and then I said, it wasn't because I knew anything was wrong with it. I didn't know anything. I said, do you drive a car the first model year?
Yeah.
It's a mistake.
Amen.
The first time it comes out, this thing is wrong.
And I'm a nerd. I've been in healthcare for a long time.
I knew from the first day not to do it.
Too quick.
So it was. I'm on record. And then within 3 months of it coming out, that's when I heard the 1,200 people died in the first 3 months of giving the vaccine. That's when I knew how bad it was. And then I started railing against it. And I never lost my jobs. I never lost it. They all stuck with me.
Thank you for talking about it. So speaking about so many people. One, I'm not to put you on the spot, but I'd love to be on your show.
Well, my show is 100%, 90% me. And then 10% really big names, Kimberly, like President Trump and senators and governors. You have to have a great topic. So if you have a great topic, email me.
Listen.
And the topic is nurses, found out about the vaccine.
The topic is, I'm an ICU nurse that left the bedside because my patients are being murdered, right? And then I start an entire new health paradigm for nurses.
Kimberly, I'm on record. Talk me into it.
All right.
Come on as a guest.
I would love to come on.
That's a good topic. I like it.
Do you know Peter McCullough?
Yeah, he's a friend of mine.
He's a friend of yours? Look at this. Like,
My TV shows, all my radio shows, all my podcasts, everything is on RootForAmerica.com. So it doesn't matter whether you know Real America's Voice, or you know Lindell TV, or you know USA Audio. You just go to Root for America and you connect to all my shows.
Absolutely.
Easy win.
We will absolutely put everything in the show notes. Wayne and Root, thank you so much for joining me.
Kimberly, thank you. God bless you.
That is all the time that we have for today, friends. But remember, we are here on the air 5 days a week, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can also catch the encore at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please be sure to tune in and listen to myself and my amazing sister nurses. As we walk you through all of these hot topics, we will empower you with information and education. We will advocate and we will stand in the gap for you, because we are nurses and this is what we do. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton, and you can find me here every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. Until next time, be safe, be well, and God bless. Remember, we are in a war for truth. We are putting out a bounty on the real misinformation and exposing the purveyors of propaganda. No topic is off limits as we shine our light and expose the darkness.